Blog Talk Radio.
March 7th, 2011, and whether you're listening live or on the archive, welcome to Phoning It In right here on the GWH Radio Network, of course, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. And I am Trent Van Dries, and you wish that you were. And, buddy, people, ladies and gentlemen, kids of all ages, we have a show lined up for you tonight. In the first hour, on the heels of our show 2 weeks ago, dare I say our landmark show 2 weeks ago, if you haven't heard it, by all means, check out the archive of the Chicken Hat Charles interview. Even if you've never heard of Chicken Hat Charles, trust me, you will want to. I can't describe it in words, but it is something. And he had several derogatory things to say about the goddess Athena, who at one time was a very well-known manager and valet in the Nashville, Tennessee wrestling area. And Athena got wind of what her old pal Chicken Hat had to say. So coming up in our first hour tonight, we will be joined by the goddess Athena. Larry Goodman has tried to deliver women to the show. He failed. Trent Van Dries tonight is going to deliver a woman, the woman, the only woman that matters to this show. So you can thank me for that. And you can also thank me for our second guest, the main event tonight, if you will. I think the whole show tonight is a main event, if you ask me. But our second guest tonight will be formerly of Ohio Valley Wrestling, Christian Miscagni, who is a lawyer in real life in Louisville and has an interesting story to tell. He was a fan that got to go behind the curtain the last few months and do some managing and be a part of an entourage in lawyer role on screen. But this past Saturday at Ohio Valley Wrestling, at their sold-out Saturday night special, this man got into a confrontation backstage with the famous and infamous and legendary Jim Cornette, of all people, and he has now quit Ohio Valley Wrestling, and he wants to come on this show tonight and tell his story. I can't wait for this. Christian Miscagni will be our guest of Ohio Valley Wrestling. He has a lot to say, and that should be very interesting as well. So right now, I'm going to pass it to the man behind the switchboard, the man that makes me do all the work on the show. I have to book guests, even though I hate it, the Norcross slacker, Larry Goodman. What's up, Larry?
And I am forever grateful, eternally grateful for your work in setting up the guests for tonight's show. It does sound really interesting, exciting, and I'm, again, thank you for doing it. Because, yes, I was unable to deliver any women to the show, so I'm glad you were able to do so.
Without too soon.
Without further ado. Of course, affiliated, related, and always associated with the all-time greatest. In this case, one of the original gangsters waiting in the wings, Uno, Murder One. How are you doing?
Yay! I'm doing all right, man. So Trent booked all this, huh?
Yes, I did. I booked the whole thing.
Gotta
give me credit, Murder. I booked all this. I booked Chicken Hat Charles. I mean, you gotta admit, I'm on a roll lately. I'm gonna deliver Athena to you tonight, Murder. Give me some props,
hey,
buddy.
Do you think Chicken Hat's listening right now?
I don't know. Here's the thing with Chicken Hat. I talked to him last Friday, and I gave him a heads up that Athena was coming on the show and had a rebuttal for him after what he said. And he said, I have no interest in what she has to say.
But
he did ask for the number of the show so he can call in and listen to future episodes. So whether he's listening tonight, Larry, if you see his number on the switchboard, you'll know. I don't know if he's going to listen or not. He said he's not.
Let it in.
Well, this might be him right. This could be him right here. Area code Area code 615. You're on phoning it in. State your name, please.
Hello?
Hey! It is Chicken Ass! I knew it! Chicken Ass, you are a liar! You knew
I didn't say I was not interested. But I was curious, however.
You are curious, all right. Well, you better get curious because your girlfriend's getting ready to come on here in a few minutes. She's
Let's
got something
get
to
one
you.
Thing straight right now.
No, she is not my girlfriend, okay?
She is not my girlfriend. I thought we cleared this up last week, okay?
It wasn't last week. It was 2 weeks ago.
I thought we cleared that up 2 weeks. I have no interest in her.
Why are you
curious as to what lie she tells.
Okay.
We don't listen on this show.
Were you just calling in to listen in,
yes,
Charles?
Yes, I was.
Okay, well, should I put you back into the green room then to listen?
Yes, pretty
much.
Yeah,
put him into the gray room.
However, if I have something to say, I'll let you know one way or the other.
And we'll let you know if we'll let you say it one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Charles just told me last Friday, I swear to God, he told me he has no interest in what she has to say. And look, he's right here. Ain't that something, murder? Ain't that something?
You knew that was some bullshit. You knew he was going to. Because all that shit he talked last week, you know he wanted to hear what she had to say.
Hey, Charles, give me some kind of sign if you want to actually get on the air and interact with her. Like, hang up and call back in so I'll have some way of knowing you want to actually talk.
Actually, Larry, does it still work if somebody presses 1, you see a little finger come up on the switchboard? Does that still work? Hello?
Press 1?
I mean, if the caller is in the queue and they press 1 on their phone, that's a signal. You'll see a little hand go up in the air, and that means they want to talk.
Oh, yeah, I see the hand here. Okay, yeah, so press 1, Charles, if you decide you want to talk.
Okay.
Yeah, you want to talk, Charles, just press 1. So we'll
all right, I'll do that.
All right, thank you, Charles.
See you in a second, Charles.
You're up.
Okay, so Charles is waiting in the wings.
So, yeah, that didn't take long. The show's already gone off the rails. Thank you. By the way, I love Charles on the show. I think he's awesome. Charles, and as I told Charles, the Internet lit up the last time he was on, so this is great. I just want to say two real quick little things, Larry, that are totally unrelated. Number one, I actually made my television debut in Louisville last night, Sunday at 7. Every Sunday at 7 I was on last night, Larry, made my debut. And number two, random thing that has nothing to do with nothing, but somebody informed me of this today. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it is. But if you type in redneckthunder.com on the Internet, it will take you to my message board. Explain that to me.
Oh, Trent, I got a message to deliver to you.
Please, give it to me.
It's from my old pal, Doc Gayton.
Oh,
and
Lord.
I quote,
"Yes,
if you keep talking, he may show up at your house." You read into that however you want to read into it.
Is he going to give me a free exam?
Yep, with a baseball bat.
Oh, please. Oh,
yeah.
Please. Whatever. Carry on. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, I just punched in Redneck Thunder, and sure enough, it goes to your message board.
I know it does.
Hey, a couple of quick news items here. The brawl for all you can eat in Statesboro drew 160 people to Ryan's Steakhouse on Saturday night.
Wow.
They were very happy. Show went on until 2 in the morning, and they were very thrilled with that turnout. So 160 people there. Of course, we have a new NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Colt Cabana, won the title yesterday in Hollywood at the NWA Hollywood taping. And guess what?
Yeah.
He'll be at Rampage Pro Wrestling on March 19th to make a title defense.
Yes. Shout out to Colt Cabana against Doc Gayton.
Oh, my. Yeah, that would make sense. That would be perfect. Yes, I can see that happening.
No, it's against J-Rod.
Interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've been watching Rampage.
I'm just making stuff up.
I've been watching
the other thing
Rampage
is they're moving to they're going to move to Sundays for all their shows starting April 17th. And I wonder what you thought about that, Uno, the move to Sundays there.
I like it. You know why? Because it opens up them other Saturdays to make more money.
Yeah.
But why would they tamper with success?
I don't know. We always did.
I mean, haven't they? I mean, the Saturdays have been drawing better and better and better lately, right?
That will translate over to the Sundays. I think
it might, but I mean, it would seem to me you would move a day if you were down. It seems strange. But then again, my mind doesn't work the Dr. Gaten way, as you know.
Who knows? Maybe we're getting ready to make big moves, and we need Saturdays for something.
Really? That could be.
I don't know.
Hey, by the way, just one thing, Larry and Murder. I've been watching some Rampage, and I've realized something, that Frankie Valentine and J Rod are the same person. Go ahead.
Yeah. what happened to Heathrow, guys?
Well, I think he went away when he pissed Brian Trammell off. He isn't good back. So.
I mean, that guy scared him off. What, man, Deep Throat, if you're listening, call. I miss laughing. And I miss your news.
Go ahead, Larry.
Well, we said we were going to touch tonight on the Urban Wrestling Federation. Their latest promotional video is posted on the George Wrestling History News section. And Murder One was going to give us a little critique of the various characters that appear on that promotional video and their tunes and so forth. And I was curious if you could give, a couple of, ignorant white guys here some clue about what your thoughts are on this whole deal.
All right.
Yeah.
Uncle Murder.
Yeah.
No relation. He's, out of all the names that they listed on the thing, he's got the most popping lyrics, because he talks about things that I like, you know what I'm saying, like the dope game and some bitches and some cars and stuff like that. Then you got Briscoe, who's a bum. And then the other one that they had was, what, Gorilla Zoe, and he's a bum. I hate Atlanta music, so. And I have sent my information in. If I do get chosen, I hope I don't get on Gorilla Zoe's team, because I'll probably quit. But I like the concept, actually. I really do, with all the rappers and stuff. I think that this will actually signify the takeover of the game by the black folks, I think. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but who says these guys can wrestle?
They're not wrestling. They're like the... They'll be all like the J.J. Dillons, you know what I'm saying? The way this thing is set up is like, it's Cruz fighting Cruz, you know what I'm saying? It's like, say, for instance, I got on and I was on Uncle Murder's team. You know, it would be Uncle Murder, he would be the rapper, and then it would be me and, say, AJ and Chavis and John Davis, And then we'd go up against the Buster team or Briscoe's team or whatever, you know what I'm saying, would have, like...
But just let me ask you, the first three guys were all dressed alike and all cut the same promo, like I said, but we're dumb white guys, but was there differences in their nuances? The first three was, watching the same guy doing the same promo, dressed alike.
They're rappers. They all sound the same. I mean, rappers, they cut the same promo.
Wow.
It's not like us when we get into it. They just, I looked at the promos and I was like, Jesus Christ, I should have wrote these for these guys, but it is what it is. I mean, they're rappers. They probably watch wrestling, but they don't know, the thing. So they probably just all sat there and was like, I'm going to say it just like this, and I'm going to do it like this. And it all came out the same.
Yeah.
So each one of these guys is going to be heading up a crew of guys, and they're different crews. This kind of reminds me, way back in one of our first shows, you were talking, Murder, about incorporating rap into...
Exactly. I wasn't going to say nothing about that, but another one of my ideas has been yanked. But, I wish them the best. Did you see the one video that they had out that had me all over it?
No.
It was one out, and it had me against Balls Mahoney on it.
Oh, from the pay-per-view?
Yeah, from the pay-per-view. It was all on there, and they pulled that one off and put fucking Ron Killings on.
Was Uncle Murder taken from your name, or is that just like straight coincidence?
No, it's pure coincidence. He's a New York rapper, Uncle Murder. He runs with this cat named French Montana.
Oh, okay.
I did pull up this fact on, of course, from that impeccable source, Wikipedia, on Uncle Murder. It says, on January 22nd, 2008, Uncle Murder was shot While in a parked car on Linden Boulevard in East New York, police suspected a man named N.A. as the prime suspect, but he was released after Uncle Murder refused to cooperate with investigators. Ironically, the shooting happened after the rapper released his mixtape entitled Respect the Shooter. Murder discharged himself from the hospital less than 24 hours after he was admitted, with the bullet still embedded in his skull.
That's right.
Right
there.
He called into the Wendy Williams radio show and said he was using Hennessy and Newports to cope with the pain.
Yeah, he should have put some weed on it, too. But see, that shit right there just made me want to be on his squad even more. This nigga walked out the hospital with a bullet in his brain and still didn't snitch on the nigga that shot him.
Yeah.
Well, Larry, I don't think you should book any of these guys, Larry, because God knows what would happen to them if you did.
They should. We should book them. We should get Uncle Murder on the show.
We should,
really...
but Larry should not. You understand what I'm going towards?
Yeah, we don't want Uncle Murder to die or get Ebola or something. But, I mean, so think about this, though. The guy that shot him, he knew who shot him, and he refused to cooperate. That right there... In the streets in the dark city, that's the no snitch clause. Cause he knew if he would have snitched, he would have got more than a bullet in his head. He would have got some stitches and all kind of shit to go with it. You don't snitch. But I guarantee you, I bet Uncle Murder, if he was a real nigga, he got that dude, you know, off camera. That's why he didn't cooperate, cause he didn't want his name to come up when he got said guy that shot him. That's real. I'm gonna get Uncle Murder on the show.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
But, yeah, better you do it than me, right?
Yeah.
I was going to say. Oh, boy.
We don't want to stop a promising rap career.
No, we don't. We wouldn't want to do that.
Well, gentlemen, anything else before we bring our first guest on?
I think the world wants our guest. The world wants our guest.
Yeah.
And we know there's one special listener that wants our guest.
The Chicken Man.
Yes.
Is she online? Let's bring her
here
on.
She is. We are honored to have her. The goddess Athena has joined us and graced us with her presence. Welcome to Phoning It In.
Wow, thank you. I'm honored to be here. It's good to talk to you guys.
You have a very sexy voice.
What's that?
I said you have a very sexy voice.
Why, thank you very much. Not really. I'm doing my Athena voice, which I'm out of practice, so maybe it's still working a little bit, but thank you.
Okay. I'm just putting it out there.
Well, Athena, I don't know if you were listening earlier. And by the way, hi, great to talk to you after all these years. It's been too long, but
yeah, I know.
Your special friend Chicken Hat is actually on the line listening. He said he couldn't stay away. So what? And I know you heard the last show, and it was a riot. It was crazy. He said all this stuff. He said you were in more motels than Gideon's Bible. He compared you to Motel 6. It was crazy. What would you have to say to Charles, who is listening right now, by the way?
Well, see, here's the thing. You know, Charles and I go way back.
I
guess
know that.
99 is the first time that we met, and he asked me out then. Didn't want anybody to know about it. We kind of kept it our little secret, really. You know how the guys are. They don't want you interacting with the fans too much. But I just couldn't resist him, and he just couldn't resist me. And it has been this love affair that has gone on for over a decade now. And, you know, he has a reputation, so he gets on the radio and he says all these things about me, which obviously he had he spent a lot of time on those statements about me. You know, he didn't just make that up. You know, you spend that much time coming up with insults for somebody, it's because you spend a lot of time thinking about them.
Yeah,
I mean, clearly.
I said it sounded like a spurned lover. The way he was dogging you out. And I even asked him, I said, did you try to get at her? And he was like, oh, no, not me. Bonk, 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 not me. But I knew what it was.
We're secret lovers.
Charles has requested an opportunity to respond here. I see he's signaling for the green room.
I'll give him a finger. I got him a finger. He's got to wait.
Just for a few moments. We'll let him sit there and steam a little bit. I like it when he's all hot like that. He knows it.
Well, I mean, I didn't ask you point blank, did you and Charles ever do it? I just want to know, did you ever do it?
You mean today? Or do you mean, because this morning.
In 1999, at any time, was there a moment of weakness where you guys just copulated?
All the time. That's what I'm telling you. It's all the time.
God.
But he just has this reputation, with, you know, that he doesn't like the heels. So, you know, we play back and forth, you know, when I'm at the shows. But come on, I hadn't seen him, you know, in the wrestling world for 4 years. And the reaction I got on December 11th when I walked into the Stadium Inn, you know, I mean, that's love right there.
He threw his boxes in the ring, didn't he?
No, I saw it. He had to be physically restrained. Go ahead, Ophelia.
Yes, I have it on my. It's on my website and it's also on my Facebook page. The video clip from that night, and you know, he just couldn't control himself. Really, in fact, I remember him saying that he never touched the heels. He said, "I have a strict policy that I don't put my hands on heels." But when you watch the video, you will see that I didn't do anything to him. I just walked out, and he starts after me. So. I think his strict policy maybe needs to be questioned as well if you bring him on a little bit later.
Let me ask you this, Athena. You texted me and corrected me on something because I said the bro gave him that name. But you claim that you actually gave him that name. Tell the story about how you gave him his name.
Well, here's the thing. My friend Michael, when I first started my shows in 99, my friend Michael came out to one of them, and he was a huge wrestling fan in Nashville and just went to things like Dancing in the District. And he saw Chickenhead everywhere he went. And I remember Michael like pulling me aside and he's like, "This guy with his hat is crazy. He's everywhere." Oh my! And he was like really excited that he was at whatever show it was, probably Madison or something. And I actually just kind of, I got a kick out of watching him the first time I saw him, you know, watching him in the crowd and how he reacted. And, actually, my parents have a hat very similar to his. They had it when I was growing up, and I hated it. I hated it. I've actually got a picture of either I'm wearing it or they're wearing it. I've got a picture somewhere that I'm going to scan and put up on Facebook whenever I can find it. But I called it the chicken hat because it was this white cowboy hat that was like the messy stuff and had these feathers all over it. It was so embarrassing when they wore it, you know. So when I saw what he wore, it reminded me of the chicken hat that my folks had. And, it, you know, I'd always called that the chicken hat. So he just became Chicken Hat at that point. So, and that was like right early on because my friend, you know, Michael had pointed him out to me. So we were very amused by Charles in the very beginning.
Well, when Charles gets frisky, when things get hot, you know, like Burt Reynolds, does the hat come off at that time?
Well, I'm usually wearing it. Sometimes Dan's watching and he's got it on.
Oh.
You know, it just depends. It just depends, really, on what the mood, what mood we're in.
Because we talked about Charles told his story about getting hit by a car, breaking his leg, and getting part of his brain cut off. But what he did not tell, or what I want you to tell, is you actually visited him in the hospital during that time.
Yes. I did visit him in the hospital, and you would have thought I walked in there with a machete because he, like, crawled back in the bed, and his eyes got, like, huge as saucers. And he was extremely terrified when I walked in to check on him. But, no, he didn't mention that. You know, he has to keep this reputation up that he hates me. But, you know, we know what the truth is.
And you
we
brought
know
him gifts. Didn't you bring him, like, flowers in a wrestling magazine or something? Or you brought him something?
I don't remember. You see, that's just one thing. Is my memory is terrible, actually. So I wouldn't.
If I remember right, you were bearing gifts at the time.
I probably was. I mean, I was bearing gifts later. I can tell you that much.
Well,
anyway,
those are all things.
Do we want to give him a chance to comment on this? Maybe he can, you know, speak the truth.
It's up to murder. It's up to murder one.
I'm ready because I got a feeling it's about to get real hot.
But do I get to make the? Do I get to say when we cut him off though? Can I have that power?
Yeah.
I'd like
to
have
that
power.
This is your interview. This is your time.
Okay, thank you.
Time.
Okay, thank you.
Charles, you're on the air.
Well, hello, you ignorant slut.
Oh, baby, you know I love it when you talk dirty to me like that.
Not true. Let's get one thing straight. I never did any of those things you said. You're nothing
yes,
but a lying little bitch.
Baby, don't deny our love.
Do
and don't deny
call
what
me
we
baby.
Have.
I am not your baby. You are a slut.
Charles, baby, I know I like
first
it when you talk dirty.
Don't
when
call me baby, okay? You are not.
I'm sorry, Daddy.
First of all, knock it off. I have no interest in you at all. Okay. Wait. I want everyone to know
exactly.
this right now.
Exactly. If you have no interest, why did you call in before we even called into our own damn show?
Thank you. Charles, admit it. It's okay. It's out there, baby.
Shut up, bitch.
Admit it, Charles.
Let's get one thing straight. I have no use for you at all. None.
Not true.
Whatsoever.
Not true.
Liar.
Charles, I cut your steak for you.
Liar.
I cut your steak for you.
Liar.
When we're at dinner.
Liar.
Charles, can I ask you a question? Charles, man, this is Murder One, your friend. Can I ask you a question?
Only if it's appropriate.
It's very appropriate. It's Murder One here. I only ask appropriate questions. Okay, here we go. When she came to see you in the hospital with candy and flowers and wrestling magazines, did you get all Hacksaw Jim Duggan and
No, I didn't. I was shocked to see her there, but that was it. Nothing more.
Why would I come see you?
Charles,
why would I come see you if we weren't lovers?
I agree with one thing about you. Your memory is off. Way off.
I want to hear the story of you dressing up like when you showed
First
up dressed
all,
like chicken
I do
ass.
Nothing
I want
for
to know.
That lying little bitch.
Charles.
All she's doing is telling lies as usual.
Charles,
I don't know
nothing.
Where the hell she gets off doing this, but basically she's lying.
Charles, I think you've been
she
exposed.
She only wishes she could do it, but she will not.
I've lost it now.
You lost it a long time ago, honey.
You know
she said
what,
she
Charles?
Gave, she said she gives you,
you
the goodies all the time, Charles.
A long
Charles.
Time ago.
Oh. Oh,
hey,
Charles.
Athena, now, when you dressed up like Chicken Hat, were you wearing your parents'
First
chicken
of all,
hat?
I don't
no, no.
dress up for that bitch,
okay?
No, I'm
we're talking
about
me
Athena.
Now.
Hold
we're
on,
talking
here.
About me. Calm down, Charles, okay? It's my
calm
turn.
Down, yeah, go ahead, Tina.
No, I made a replica chicken hat
that
I wore in Madison, blue.
Yeah,
this was
I
more authentic
that.
In
you
color.
Told
yes,
lies
you.
About that as usual.
Okay, so there were no lies, really, but I made the replica chicken hat, and then there was a PGWA show where I dressed as a man and with a mustache and a wig, and I sat beside him during the show for a few matches before I did a run-in, and he did
really?
Not realize it was me next to him the whole time. He did look at me very
really?
Strangely
a
few times.
I don't remember that.
Of course you don't.
Now your memory's faulty.
Yeah.
No.
Well, he has a slice of brain missing.
I remember something like that.
Well, maybe it's, I went with that slice of brain that's gone that they took out at the hospital.
Oh, please. They don't do lobotomies.
Did he look at you when you were dressed up? When you were dressed up like a man, did he look at you and say, "Excuse me, sir, but you have very nice eyes"?
He did not. He put his hand on my thigh. Which I thought was odd.
You're such a liar. You are such a liar.
He clucked like a chicken when he saw
it. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. And I guess we can maybe we. Unless you have, do you have any, Charles? Do you have anything nice to say about me at all? Have I not provided you any entertainment over all these years?
Yeah. Come on,
have you nothing nice to say?
The only nice thing I can say about you is you're not around, and I'm glad of it.
the only reason I came back, don't you, Charles?
To annoy me, perhaps.
That is exactly right. That is
well,
exactly right.
We agree on something there, don't we?
And since I'm doing such a good job, Charles, I may just have to come back again sometime soon.
You better not.
I
guarantee you think I got angry then. Just wait. You ain't seen angry from me yet, bitch.
Oh, well, that is very exciting, and I'm looking forward to it, sir, until we meet again, dear Charles, which will probably be like sometime later tonight, about 11:30.
You better. Oh, right. In your dreams. Don't believe her. She's lying again.
All right.
I gotta know, is Charles good in the coop, Athena?
First
of course
of all,
he is.
She's lying. Don't believe her. Don't believe her.
What does he lay an egg?
He does tend to quote Rocky Horror Picture Show a lot. And I'm not really quite sure.
I only said that because I believed it to be true.
Hey, whatever gets you off, baby.
No.
Right? Whatever you enjoy.
Whatever you enjoy, Charles.
Yeah, you wish.
Well, I guess, Charles,
what
until
that was. You
until we
wish.
Meet later this evening. What's that?
At 11:08. Please get off yourself.
I'll get you off instead, okay, darling?
Oh,
let's go ahead and
cut him off.
Let's cut him off. Goodbye, Charles. And Charles, I'll see you again soon. I promise.
He's gone.
Fuck on, Playboy.
All right. Okay. In all actuality, no. It would be disgusting, and I'd probably rather gouge out my eyes with spoons and swallow tar, I think. There's probably a lot more things that I'd rather do. But as you can see, acting like we do it is what really makes him angry. So I've pretty much had that as my gimmick for, I'd say, I think I started in about, like, 2004, and it works pretty well. Because
a lot of mileage. Well,
yeah, seriously, I had not seen him in 4 years. At all. And to get that reaction when I came back in December was worth it to me. Seriously, I wanted to see Chicken Head. That was a big part of why I wanted to come back. I don't miss all the drama. And what's that?
Did you miss wrestling while you were gone? And why did you come back?
You know what? I'm not kidding about the Chicken Head part. But, no, I really don't. Like, I miss the fun with Charles and messing with him, and I do, you know, I do like to be, like, to play the mean character. I mean, I kind of miss that as just an outlet for my anger, but I just don't have that much anger now anymore either, but no, I miss the clothes, and just it's some of the, you know, just it's fun. I mean, it was really fun for a long time, and when it started not being any fun is when I left, because I didn't want to hate it forever, you know. And we had a good time in the fall when we came back, and the only reason we did that was because Kroll asked us to come back, and we love Kroll, and we love Tony, and, like, there's just a handful of people that we really do like and get along with and still talk to outside of the business, and we'll pretty much do anything for Kroll. And he's just always been really, really good to us and to me and to Dan, and so, yeah, we came back for him, and, you know, it was that's why we shot the promos out in Maui and Rodeo Drive and Vegas, and that was because he was supposed to have some TV that started up, and that kind of fell through, and, yep. You know, we were okay with it because we still had some fun, and like I said, I really wanted to see Charles, which was the main reason that I wanted to go back to Nashville, was just to go to the Stadium Inn, which I said I would never do again. I just had to see Charles before I quit again, and I really, my last show was going to be in January. I didn't, like, announce it as such. I just was kind of ready to be done. But Kroll has a birthday coming up in October, and he's wanting to do a show at the fairgrounds, and I'm definitely going to participate in that this fall. But between now and then, I'm just so busy right now, and I just don't really have time. And we like, the drama that came with us coming back, just leading
good.
Up, when the word was that we were coming back, the drama was so ridiculous. And it was like the stuff
like
we were hearing from people, just, you know, just my ass was going to get kicked if I step into a locker room, and who wants to bring that bitch back and stuff. And it's like, seriously, it's been 4 years, really five, because we just did the one shot in 06. You know, who is even going to really remember me around here, in all honesty? You know, you know, we were asked to come back. We still, you know, we did it. That's how we met. That's how I met my husband. You know, that's what we love. So we wanted to come back just for nostalgia. You know, but the crap that came with it, like, leading up to us coming back was so ridiculous. And then it just kind of, when we came back and everybody was like, you know, it's no big deal, nobody cares, they're here, whatever, it kind of fizzled out, and that was great. And we had a good time. And honestly, the most fun we had was probably at the Stadium Inn, which is just ironic. But we really, you know,
you
we had
that
a good
place.
What's that?
I thought you hated that place.
I did hate it. I hated it at the time when I left because of how miserable I was there. It just felt, I don't know. It just I guess when, you know, when you're coming from TNA or whatever, and the fairgrounds and some of these nicer places, and you go to the Stadium Inn, and there's people getting on the elevator in there. Underwear and an open robe with, like, a cigarette hanging out of their mouth, you know. It's like it just didn't feel safe, and it felt gross. But, the, you know, and I complained about that at the time. But going back this time, they have a different locker rooms all set up. It was nicer, you know. And, it, I mean, but the atmosphere and Tony and the people there made it more fun. It was so relaxed, and everybody was having a good time, and nobody thought they were number one. Nobody was like, you know, there was just no bullshit. It was just nice, and everybody was having a good time. And that, to me, reminded me of my McMinnville days in the very beginning. It was just fun. And so I enjoyed that, you know. So yeah, it's ironic that that's how it ended up, that I had the most fun at the stadium and after saying I'd never go back. But, you know, never say never.
At one point, Chicken Hat lived at the Stadium Inn, and then they were calling it the Chicken House for a while. There.
I wanted to hit him up on that, too, because he said I was the only one that could use the Motel 6 as a resident address. And I thought, wait a minute, didn't you live in the Stadium Inn? That's so nasty. You lived in a crack house.
Well, I feel like I'm hogging it here. I'm gonna pass it off to Larry or Murder. Go ahead. Someone jump in.
Okay.
I just had a couple of questions, and Athena, it's a pleasure to talk to you again after all these
years. You too, Larry.
Years.
I haven't seen you forever.
Yeah. I was curious about what, just a couple things. One, what are your fondest memories of, you've touched on some of them already, but what are some of your other fondest memories of your involvement in pro wrestling?
You know, obviously I was never a wrestler. I was never, when I had to wrestle, I was never very good at it, and I didn't think I had anything really to offer as a wrestler, because I just, you know, I think my better work was as a manager. So I really honestly enjoyed the stuff that we did at USWO with Lisa Faison, to go from this girl who was just kind of sent out to manage somebody as like a favor of somebody, and to turn her into what we did and make that angle to last for so long and people still be interested in it, up and through the two food fight matches, the one I had with Genghis and the one I had with her. Like, those were so much fun. And it was like, I know it wasn't really about wrestling, what I was doing there, but I really love looking back at that and just the free rein I got from Kroll and Tony to just kind of do whatever, and the trust they had in me to come up with that stuff. And it was a lot of fun. Obviously, anything with Genghis was always fun, picking on him. And, you know, as far as wrestling, I really, even though I wasn't very good in the matches, I enjoyed working with the Cat in Memphis and in Georgia, and, you know, the same match that we did in a bunch of different towns. I had a lot of fun doing that, because starting out for me, I never, you know, I was going to be fine staying in McMinnville in Columbia. You know, so to get to work with some of the people like Stacy Keebler at the Western Kentucky State Fair, like to get to work with some of the people I got to work with and do what I got to do just blew my mind. Like, I'm, you know, I'm still really excited looking back that I got those opportunities. So, you know, I mean, there's really not much that I didn't enjoy about it other than the drama and the crap that comes with the promoters and the workers. And, you know, you spend so much time with people, you know, week after week, after, you know, weekends, Fridays, Saturdays, you see the same folks, and sometimes you don't even know their real name. You know their persona, and a lot of these people consider each other friends, and, you know, you kind of find out that that's not really the case. But there are a few that we still, especially Dan, he's close with a couple of the guys still, and, you know, there's still, I think I have more fans probably than I'm friends with now, than workers for sure. Like Brian Gaddis, the photographer, I mean, you know, still stay in touch with him as often as I can and love him to death and thank wrestling for being able to meet somebody like him and bring him into our lives, you know. So we had Brian at our wedding. I mean, you know, Brian's, he's gold to us. So, you know, there's a lot of good, I'd say probably more of the fans I'm friends with that are probably a good, like, thing. The heel section, you know, those guys, like. Yeah. There's been stuff outside of wrestling that I've done with them that I cherish those memories just as much as stuff I did in the ring, you know, because I wouldn't have met those people without wrestling, too. So not to get all, like, super sappy and cheesy and stuff, but, you know.
What are your thoughts on Burke Prentice?
I don't know how he's doing. I heard that he wasn't well for a while, and I think he's better now. And I honestly, truly hated to hear that. I don't want to do that for anybody. And, you know, there are a few times that Bert and I actually had serious conversations, very few, about life and not about wrestling. And I really am glad that I had those times with him. But because I feel like that was maybe a little bit of real Bert that I got to see, but the 90% of Bert is promoter Bert that I had to deal with. And there were times when he was very good to me and would give me free reign, like that Big Bully Douglas Charlie Brown commercial thing I did. That's on my YouTube page and my website too. I've still got that up there if anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about. I really like that one. Even though Coleman couldn't spell anything on the – I wish I'd been there when they were editing that because I spelled everything wrong on the graphics. But, you know, we had Coleman out there at the end, and, you know, I kind of hated that. Would have liked to have had things end more peacefully with him because of all the years that we worked together, but that's just kind of how it goes. But I do – if he hears about this, I do hope he's doing well. And I still think about him every now and then, wonder how he's doing, you know. But, I you know, for most of my time with him was good. He treated me very well. So.
And just one other thing. I'm just curious, like, how's life after wrestling?
It is amazing. You probably wouldn't believe half the stuff I told you, but Dan has gone on. We got married, of course, and it'd be best for our marriage and healthiest to just be away from wrestling would be probably the best thing we could do. But he went on, I don't know if I've talked about this before, probably not, I guess. He actually graduated. He was back at MTSU when we got together, and he went on from there and got his master's at Vanderbilt in finance. And he is, I'll just say he's taking good care of me, and I'm not working now and haven't been working for over a year, and I'm actually back in school because I never graduated, and it always bothered me. And I'm back in school, and I'm studying photography, and I'm very, very, very happy. So,
outstanding.
Doing that. And we're just rescuing dogs left and right. I'm very OCD, and I hate, like, dirt and dust and stuff around the house. And now we had three dogs, and as of last week, we now have four because we just adopted a pit bull. So he's the sweetest one. We have three little dogs, and he's the sweetest one of all three of them, I swear. And, you know, it's funny because they're biting him, and he's, like, just taking it. We keep an eye on him, though, because he, you do hear things and stuff, but it's not true. I mean, they're a very misunderstood breed, and we're volunteering with some rescues now. And I'm actually doing a photo, kind of a documentary project on pit bull rescue right now, too, so. Just got a lot busy. That's why I'm so busy all the time. I appreciate you guys letting me come on tonight while it's spring break, too. Because I really don't have time. Like, I'm just constantly working all the time on photos and Photoshop and just and dog stuff now. So, but really happy. We're doing great. It's a U2 year. U2's touring this year, too. So we've got going to at least 5 shows. They're finally coming to Nashville. I've seen U2 30 times. So that's one of my big things. So very excited U2 is finally coming to Nashville. And, that's pretty much, I mean, I'm good. Life is good, man. It really
Glad
is. I can't
that.
Complain at all.
Glad to hear that. Hey, Uno, you got any questions for Athena?
I got one.
Sure.
I want to know, in your own words, describe what you think about Bill Behrens, because that's how I met you, and that was through Bill when you came through at Wildside, and you did a few Wildside events and stuff like that.
Well, I, honestly, I don't really know Bill all that well, other than the few times I was down there. I just didn't really get to be around him a whole lot, but he was always great to me and always seemed, like, very professional, you know, especially compared to most of the other, I don't know if it's just the way he was dressed, you know, but I remember, like, being more intimidated by Bill than any other promoter I'd worked for at the time. And just the way he carried himself and came across, I think, was probably a big part of that, too. But he was always great to me. You know, I wish I could work for him more at the time, but I'm glad I got to when I did. I appreciated him bringing me down, too. So, but I really don't,
like,
I don't know if I have a lot of other stuff to say other than that, really.
But you're like the 50th person I've ever heard that says Behrens intimidates them.
He did at first for me, for sure.
I see it all the time at Rampage, too. He'll say something to somebody, and they'll freeze up. And I'm like, why are you freezing up? It's just Behrens.
I guess, you know, again, when you're wrestling at Cheese Factory every weekend or some, you know, batting cage place, you know, like to go down there, it was, you know, kind of a big deal. And it, you know, you wanted to do a good job, and he just seemed like, you know, it was his baby, you know, so he was kind of like up on a little bit of a pedestal there. But he was always great to me when I worked with him.
You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying, though, Trent? Everybody.
Hey, I've got a lot of respect for Bill Barons. I mean,
he has the power. Everybody fears the Barons.
Well, Murder One, perception is reality.
I don't fear the Barons, but everybody else does.
I don't think I fear anybody anymore, just to let you know. it's just different
you're
now.
You're safe now. You're out of the wrestling business. You can't
haunt
your career.
I mean,
hey, Larry,
can
I ask two more real quick?
Go for it.
What's that?
I'm sorry, can I ask two more real quick questions? They're unrelated, but I do have two questions. My question is, one is, who is the favorite person or people that you got to manage or valet for? Who would be your favorite? The Naturals, Booty Call, Hot Rod Biggs? Who would be your absolute favorite, would you say?
Well, obviously I have to say Booty Call, you know. seriously, the promos that we did, we had so much fun. It was really cool when I met them that they, like, good enough wasn't an option. Like, a lot of times you shoot promos with people and they're like, we did a take. I didn't feel really comfortable. They're like, good enough. These two, we would do it again and again and again and again until we had it how we wanted it. And fortunately, Crawl was always very patient with us. And I think I honestly think he liked that about us, too. Like, good enough was never it. Like, we wanted to work, and especially with our promos and our vignettes and stuff, and we wanted them to be, you know, the best that we could possibly make them. For what we had, the budget and all that budget. I didn't call it, there was no budget, but you know what I mean. For what we had to work with, we really wanted everything to be the best. And they were the first guys that felt that way, like how I felt about promos and things like that. So we had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with them. And I think I was in a more laid-back environment when I managed them. You know, it wasn't like, working for Bert, which was always a little bit stressful, you know. It was just, that's one cool thing about Tony. It's just always, there's never a lot of stress. There's never really stress when you're working for Tony, you know, and with Kroll. So, Hot Rod trained me, you know. I look back on some of our moments together, and I still laugh and smile, you know, some of the stuff that that we did and the fights that we got into, you know, driving to a show or from a show or whatever. And, you know, we were just very, very different people. So it's really amazing that we worked together as well as we did, because we came from completely different worlds, like completely different beliefs and how we should live our lives and live them completely differently. And, I still think we had something special together, you know, starting out. And I'm also grateful to him for giving me my chance too, because I remember when he met me, he's like, I don't know about this girl, I don't know if she'd be trashy enough. I'm like, yes, I can, I promise, give me a chance. I don't walk around that way, but I can do it. So I enjoyed working with the Naturals, because that was, you know, to me it felt like big time, you know, being at TNA and working with them with Bert, and we had some fun too. But I'd say, you know, there wasn't like a whole lot of creativity like that. That's more my thing. Like, cause when I get to do stuff just outside of managing, a little bit more like promos and things like that, that's what I really love to do. So.
And my other question is, and I, not to bring up a bad memory necessarily, but I can't remember the girl's name, but could you tell the story of when Vince Russo tried to double cross you at TNA and told the girl to pull your pants off in the ring?
That was Desire. Kim Nielsen, I think.
Desire.
Yeah. See, that the TNA, all that stuff with TNA was so
goofy.
You know, you're excited because you're there, but then if you want to get further there, there are things that I was going to have to do that I didn't want to do and didn't do, which is why I left. And, you know, just stuff like Jerry Jarrett, you know, basically that the first time I really ever talked to him, I'm in the ring, we're in the middle of that angle where we're starting with Sonny Siaki and Desire, and Jerry turns around and asks me before the show, will you show your tits? And I said no.
Wow.
And, I said, you know, I'll go down to a bra, because to me that's the same as a bathing suit. It's just mental, you know, oh, wow, we're seeing a bra. But if I was at the beach, you'd see the same thing. And I did go down to they tore my shirt off and went down to the bra. And I think it was that night. Now, I have to look at the pictures, honestly, or watch the video clip to make sure I'm not getting my times crossed. It may have been that night that I'm in the ring and the top had been ripped off and I'm in my bra and like the match was over and she is starting to take my pants off, trying to pull my jeans off. And Sonny is standing there telling her to do it. And she's saying she's not supposed to, and he's supposedly he's confused about what was told to him or something, you know. And she's listening to him even though she doesn't think it's right. I'm screaming no, and I'm holding on to my pants with everything I have.
Right.
And it's just like, as I remember it, like the lights just faded out while we're in the ring. Like, I mean, you know, they just faded out until we finally got out of there, and it was just...
But that was a Russo thing, was it not? Wasn't that a Russo creation?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all. But
sure
I won, because my pants stayed on, hey.
Pants stayed on, yeah.
Because
I remember she was trying to get them off, and you stood in the corner screaming no, and finally she just gave up. It was just...
I think we were, like, in the center, and I was on the ground, and she was, like, trying to pull them up, like, roll them up off of me, like, from my waist, like, she's pulling, I mean, it was all, and it was just so long and awkward, like the whole thing, and you know, but no, you know, no way, I wasn't gonna do that, you know. I mean, to me, that's one thing. I'll dress like a slut and I'll say slutty things. Rarely did you ever hear me curse at ringside. Rarely, I didn't believe that wrestling was a place for children at all, but people brought their children there, and so I always kept that. You know, in the back of my mind. And so, you know, that's why I would never flash my chest to an arena full of people. You've got people, grown adults, that would be very, very offended by that, as well as children that don't need to see that. And
Lollipop did it?
Well, like 2 weeks after, or the week after, Jerry asked me to do it. But I, you know, it wasn't for me. You know what I mean? That wasn't for me. And, I don't think it's necessary for wrestling, and for me personally, I was never going to do something like that. You know, it'd be one thing to pose in a magazine, and adults are, you know, looking at the magazine, supposedly, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's intended for an adult audience. Wrestling should be intended for an adult audience, but it is not, and children are there, and it is not right. If someone walks into a nudie bar, they know they're going to see naked chicks. If you walk into wrestling, you know, you're not expecting to see that, you shouldn't see that. That's just my opinion on it, and that's why I didn't do it. So.
Awesome. Oh, this has been great, Athena. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been wonderful.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. And so, you know, maybe back around in October when and if Kroll does his birthday thing at the fairgrounds, and until then, I've got plenty of stuff to do. So I'm not.
Have you got any parting words for your fans, or even for, you know, is Chicken Head still on the line, Larry?
He is still in the green room, yes.
Oh, Charles. Charles, my darling Charles. That's nice. You know what? Just I'm going to keep my Facebook updated with some stuff. I'm not as good at it as I should, but if you go to my website, can I look? Okay, it's www.the-goddess-athena.com. And then on Facebook, I'm just the Goddess Athena. And, you know, I try to. You can just like the page. I don't do the friend request thing or anything like that. That's a little too much for me. I wouldn't have time to deal with it like that. But I'll try to post. I keep saying I'm going to. I don't get time, but I'm gonna try to, you know, post some old pictures and stuff old videos, just as time permits. Just I'm gonna at least keep that stuff updated because it's fun for me to go back and look at it and stuff too. And you know, I like it when people post pictures up on the Facebook page. And you know, I still have some video from the fairgrounds, too, that I've got to get. I think Dan's converted it over. I just haven't uploaded it yet, so I've got to do that, too. But yeah, I'll keep that stuff running, and that'll kind of keep you posted on any whereabouts. But other than that, that's really about it, man.
Well,
things are good.
Lot.
Things are great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're a class act. And I mean, you said it well as far as, like, to do the role you did and keep your dignity. You know, it's not easy with the way pro wrestling is at times, and I thought you described that very well.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us, and come
thank
back
so
and sometime.
Yeah, thank you guys. Take care.
Thank you very much.
All right, have a good night.
And the sick internet bastards, Larry, we actually gave them a Chicken Hat Athena confrontation. They ought to be. They probably creamed their pants all the way over Middle Tennessee after that. So,
Larry, did you actually mention dignity and wrestling in the same sentence?
Yes, he did.
I did. I think she brought. She was dignified in the way she did
was.
Things. Yes.
I agree with that. She was great.
Okay. I'm just saying.
I know. Oxymoron, right? Dignified
yeah,
pro wrestling.
Dignity in wrestling, that's just like cocaine and waffles. That just don't go together.
Well, that's some segue to our next guest. We're joined now by Christian Miscagny, the very recently former OVW manager, practicing attorney in the Louisville area. Welcome to Phoning It In, Mr. Miscagny.
Thank you, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're fine. How are you?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Trent.
Well, Christian, I guess the best way to start this is, why don't you give us a brief synopsis of how you came to be an OVW and take us through what happened this past Saturday night with your confrontation with none other than Mr. Jim Cornette. Tell us what happened.
Absolutely. I'm born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky. 33 years old, grew up a huge wrestling fan. You know, USWA used to come here every Tuesday night. My father actually played a part in Jerry the King Lawler's statutory rape charge.
Wow.
Some 20-odd years ago.
Wow.
So that really got me and my brothers into wrestling. I mean, basically, as soon as Lawler was cleared. I mean, every time, this is back when WWF was bringing Raws and In Your Houses to Louisville 3-4 times a year. I mean, we'd call him and we'd be ringside every time. So I grew up always being a big fan. And later in life, as I became an attorney, it just so happened that Al Snow, who at the time was the head of the developmental at OVW, something had happened where I'd gotten him out of a speeding ticket or something, and he ended up passing my name along to a few of the OVW guys and would handle minor stuff for people when they got in trouble, you know, nothing serious, traffic tickets, and would occasionally hit an OVW show. Got to know Kenny Bolin a little bit, who... believe it or not, really is a nice guy.
Oh, I believe it. I think he's great.
And I guess fast forward a little bit, Cliff Compton, formerly, you know, Domino in WWE,
right,
had basically been released and was still living here in Louisville. And was going to do a, and I can't talk a whole lot about it because there's a pending lawsuit, but was basically going to do an entertainment-type show at a venue called The Palace here. And it was like him, whatever the guy that John Morrison's partner used to be, the Eminem guy.
Mercury,
and whatever the crippled announcer on OVW, Timmy something.
Baltimore.
Yeah, those three were going to do a show, and it was basically, it wasn't a wrestling show, it was an entertainment variety show, and to make a long story short, like I said, I can't really get into it much because my dad's representing Cliff on the lawsuit, but Cliff really got screwed over out of a lot of money. He basically put a lot of money into this show. And they basically put him in a position where they couldn't do it on the night of. And through a mutual friend, Cliff, I know I'm somewhat a successful attorney here in Louisville, and one of Cliff's friends recommended he come see me. I do criminal defense, and so this type of civil stuff was way over my head. I referred him to my father. Like I said, they've got that lawsuit going. and you know, me and Cliff just became friends, you know, same age group. But, you know, he wasn't doing much. And I think he was kind of down a little bit about what had happened to him. And finally decided to go back to OVW and get some exposure and, you know, really went in there and just dominated and tried to get some exposure and to show WWE or TNA that, you know, there was more to him than just a greaseball tag team gimmick. Something came up where they wanted to do a segment with a lawyer. So Cliff thought it would be fun, and Bolin thought it would be fun to get me involved.
Yeah.
So we did it just for fun and didn't expect much to come out of it. And then it ended up, I got a pretty good reaction. Just now, keep in mind, you know, you're talking about somebody who's just a fan, no wrestling
right.
training. Nobody taught me how to cut a promo. You know, all I knew is what I've seen on TV.
Right.
So
wow.
So really my character kind of caught on as a nice heel for OVW, just kind of an arrogant attorney that represents bad guys and, you know, keeps bad guys out of trouble. When we first got there, their attendance was pathetic. I think they'd been taken off TV earlier, and now we're back on TV, but kind of were on a channel that nobody really knew about. And so they were basically rebuilding from square one. And the reason I got involved initially was out of my friendship to Cliff, and him trying to get back in to the wrestling world. I would help out and get bars that, you know, I represent a lot of bar and club owners, and would get them to sponsor OVW shows so they could get advertising, you know, in the local papers. And then we came up with an idea where we used myself and a deputy sheriff from downtown, a legitimate sheriff, Steve Yancey.
Yeah.
And the big idea was for this big triple threat cage match, supposed to, you know, blow off the feud or whatever. And turns out that the courthouse people were so ate up with me and Yancey, because, you know, when you talk about the courthouse downtown, you're talking about lawyers, sheriffs, you know, workers, judges, police officers. So the show we did ended up being, what I was told, the biggest crowd in Davis Arena history. And
this was an early January.
You know, I mean, no, this was, yeah, the January Saturday Night Special.
Right, right.
Now, you know, and so at the time, you know, Danny Davis had offered, you know, numerous times to compensate me. I did not want any money or anything from those guys. They put one of my banners up. It's on the hard cam whenever you watch OVW TV.
Right. Yep.
But, you know, I never wanted a dollar from those people. I was happy to help. I liked a lot of the younger guys in OVW. The older guys, like, that's a different story, and I'll tell you all about a few of them shortly.
Okay.
But I was really, it was really just me wanting to see a 33-year-old fan who had grown out of liking wrestling, was enjoying watching the old school booking and, you know, just kind of sick of the crap that's on WWE and TNA every week. So I was trying to contribute in my own small little part of helping OVW succeed. We go to the February, no, I'm sorry, Saturday Night Special after that, which I believe I was not involved in at all. Oh, no, I was. This is when things started to get bad, I remember.
Okay.
I started to hear stuff, complaints in the locker room from, you know, guys like Lowrider, Matt Varela, who I mean, the guy couldn't work to save his life. And for some reason, they had him as the top baby face in the company at the time. And, I mean, the guy's just a complete scumbag, two-faced, came to me asking for legal help. But then when I wasn't there, would talk about, you know, Christian thinks he's so good because he's selling these tickets. And I'm like, guys, I'm not trying to get in WWF or TNA. I'm not your competition. I'm here out of my friendship to Cliff and my friendship to the Bolins. And I thought I had grown into having a good relationship with a couple different guys, Mike Mondo, Paradise. I became social friends with them and wanted nothing in return. And so I actually asked Kenny Bolin at the February Saturday Night Special. They actually let me go out and let me do a complete unscripted promo where I basically called out anybody in the locker room that had a problem with me, saying that I was getting too much TV time, not paying my dues. And I was completely serious. I had no idea if anybody was going to come out or not. But
right now, I actually bought that DVD and I watched that and I went down because I said that sounds like a shoot to me. And I even said to myself, no, that actually may piss somebody off in the back, just watching what you said about it.
Well, and I got to be honest with you. I legitimately thought that there was a chance somebody was going to come out and that there was going to be a fist fight. I really felt like the fact that I have basically tripled or quadrupled your all's attendance. I'm giving you all shows. You know, these guys have been wrestling in front of 30, 40 people, and all of a sudden I'm bringing, you know, at least a couple hundred out to their Saturday night specials. And like I said, asking for nothing in return, just because I liked the business. And I wanted to see them succeed. And I thought Danny Davis was a good guy, and I thought Jim Cornette was a good guy. But mostly it was because I wanted Cliff to get as much exposure as he could. So the February promo, the Jim Cornette stuff was a work. You know, Jim had said I could say what I wanted about him. The Dean Hill stuff was actually serious somewhat.
Really?
You know, he had come to me asking for help, in a legal situation. You know what? You can't stay mad at Dean Hill. He was just playing his job. So I really didn't have a problem with him. But the part about the veterans saying that I hadn't paid dues and saying that I was just a mark trying to sell tickets to get on TV, I mean, I don't even know what mark means. I mean, you know, I was just a fan trying to help the company, and it's not my fault that I was getting a better reaction than the majority of the roster. And, you know, and I'm not saying that to be arrogant, but I'm just saying being associated with Cliff gave me that main event rub to where, you know, I came out and, you know, Trent, you even said it on one of your reviews, you know, Christian, you know, you can tell he tries hard. Sometimes he has great results. Sometimes he does a bad job. But, you know, I was just trying my best to help the company. And, you know, giving Cliff a big entourage, you know, with Mo Green, me, Pavarazzi, and then later bringing in Rocco Bellagio, you know, I just thought we all agreed it was just a nice little way, something different that made it look like he was, you know, this huge star. So things started to get bad in February. I could tell there was a lot of tension with Matt Barella. I could go on and on about. Can I cuss on this show or not?
Yeah, you're
saying
whatever you want.
The guy's just a two-faced asshole. I mean, I think he's been in OVW for 5-7 years. You know, never been called up, so he's never gonna be. So it's like. And all the younger guys would complain to me about how he always would try to bury them and keep them down, and I always just cared about his spot at the top of the card. And unfortunately, because I was with Cliff, you know, I had to work, you know, in the situations with him. And, you know, Cliff and Mondo would put on these fabulous matches, and, you know, and Low Rider was just always screwing them up. So we go to February, and, you know, that was a legitimate shoot to the back. I really, at that point.
I was going to say, was that the catalyst for the problems, your shoot on the back in February? Was that what started the downhill slide, or was it?
No. I would say the opposite of that. I would say
really? Me
starting to hear people, you know, me starting to see the dirty side of wrestling and the horrible side of wrestling is what caused the shoot. The people that I was helping coming and telling me what guys were saying behind my back is what caused the shoot. And with God as my witness, I don't care if I would have got my ass kicked that night. If anybody would have come through that curtain, I was ready to fight. And, you know, nobody did. And, you know, I don't think most of the boys, you know, they never knew with me if I was being serious or if I was joking, because I would always.
Now, when you went back to the back after that, did anything happen? Was anything said? Was anybody, like, listening, or were they kind of in their own little world back there?
Nobody said a word.
But really?
Actually, Jim Cornette came and gave me a hug to tell me how good it was.
Wow.
And then just to rib me, he told me that when I threw the microphone down that I'd broken it and had ruined
the mic
for the rest of the show. So
he
had me laughing.
And then
I think I still had to come out with Cliff for the main event. It was Cliff versus Mondo, and I think Low Rider was referee.
Right.
We had to go out, and even though we got ejected, we had to go back and plan what the finish to the match was going to be. It was basically where we all had to ring near the end.
Yeah.
But I was starting to feel a lot of tension from a few of the older people. You know, Josie. You know, you're talking about somebody who I think, you know, she has her little cup of coffee in TNA, and, you know, all of a sudden thinks she's, you know, God's gift. I mean,
wow.
gets out of shape, gets fat, doesn't show up ever. I mean, this last Saturday Night Special was honestly the first time I'd seen her wrestle, I think,
since December, I think.
I thought it was even before that, but you might be right. I guess since they ran the Blossoms out.
Yeah, that was the same.
So, you know, she always had an attitude with me. You know, Low Rider was the one that was really, that I'm finding out now the guys are telling me, was always mouthing off about me when I wasn't there. You know, which to me I find amazing, because 75% of that roster thanked me all the time for giving them big houses to wrestle in front of. You know, it's something that they hadn't experienced at OVW probably since WWF had pulled out of the developmental deal. You know, WWF took the majority of the roster, and they had to start from scratch. Danny Davis had some personal problems, wasn't really around to see it, and then. So the show really, I think went to shit, and then Danny and Jim Cornette came back strong. You know, they had that October, you know, premiere show, which is also where Cliff debuted, and Danny Davis made a TV appearance and addressed the troops. You know, that was really like that was kind of the big turning point night for the organization.
Well, no, you did say one thing yesterday on the phone to me, just real quick. You said one thing yesterday on the phone to me, like you said, well, we only had like eight guys that looked like wrestlers. And when you told me that yesterday, I thought to myself, well, you know, that's eight more than a lot of independent groups have nowadays.
And to be frank with you, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about the independent scene.
Yeah, there's a lot of indies that don't have any guys that look like wrestlers. It's just nothing, you know.
But, you know, my big thing that I had a problem with is, well, let's start with Rocco Blasio. Rocco's a guy who has, in my opinion, has a great look to him. big, muscled up. I predict will be a future star in this business. You know, fresh out of class, I had come up with the idea that because at the cage match, I'd taken a choke bump from Steve Yancey, and kind of as an homage to Bobby Heenan, wore a neck brace for 6 months on TV, or 4 months on TV.
Yeah.
And the storyline being that I needed a bodyguard. Well, this is where it gets even more interesting with the veterans, and I get to see the ugly side of wrestling. All of a sudden, I hear that, so it gets approved. I pitch it to Jimmy. I was like, Jimmy, you know, Rocco's got a good look. This gets, instead, you all are always complaining that, you know, the roster's so thin. Why don't you let Rocco be my bodyguard? He won't have to speak. I'll say we flew him in from Sicily, that he's my cousin. You know, I came up with the promo where I introduced him.
Yep.
Benny Bray very graciously came out and put him over in that 3 second match.
Yep.
And, you know, bam, Rocco's an instant star right then and there. Because all of a sudden he's in affiliated with Cliff and me and basically the main event heel faction.
Well, it seemed like at the time, for a minute there, you might be splitting away from Compton, but then, was that ever going to be the case? But then it didn't happen. You're right back with him.
There was talks of it. I felt like he had Mo Green, and Mo was good enough for him to have. And honestly, my idea that got shot down was, give me two or three mid-carders that you're doing nothing with, that's doing dark matches, and let me form a faction with them. Let them be the Mascagni family. Had a great idea. I wanted to use Benny Bray, who I think, in my opinion, it's a travesty the way they use him on the show. I mean, this kid works his tail off, does anything that's asked of him. Nice guy. My idea was to kind of make him – to pair him up with me, Rocco, and maybe get another big guy and have him almost be like an X-Pac, you know, heel, annoying heel character that, you know, ran around with the big guys and talked shit, but could still do his high-flying moves. And, you know, just watching the kid practice, I mean, and they've never let him showcase it on TV. I mean, I've seen the guy do the Justin Gabriel 450 splash. You know,
he's never really shown that much in the ring. He looks okay at times. Other times, he's pretty. You know, I don't know.
They don't let him. You know, they pretty much people like him. They weren't giving him an opportunity. You know, Cornette had his favorites at the top of the card, and. You know, so, when you're talking about how you thought that it looked like I might be breaking off from Cliff, I tried to do something with that. I thought it was just by coincidence I'd had to miss 2 weeks of TV in a row, and those 2 weeks in a row he'd lost to Benjamin Bray, of course, with Lowrider's interference. And so I thought a good catalyst for the storyline would be me coming out and basically saying, you know, when I'm not here, you know, look what happens.
Things go to shit.
My thought was, you know, I'm not going to be here much longer, but use me, because Cliff is by far the most over person and the best personality in OVW. And to me, it's a shame that he's not on WWE or TNA, because I mean, I honestly believe this, and it's not just because he's my friend. On the mic, I put him in the top 10 of anybody that's on TV of any organization right now. I mean, that guy can cut a promo, can get heat,
he showed up in fantastic shape. That's for sure. You know,
He really, really worked his ass off.
Pretty lean, really, you know. So.
Yeah, you know, he didn't want to have that jacked up steroid look. And, you know, was moving around great. And, you know, to be honest, really got dicked over, went down to FCW for 2 weeks or a week. did some stuff. Basically, when John, whatever his name is, Laurinaitis, came here in December to scout, pretty much more or less, it was when Raul was here in Louisville. You know, they pretty much told Cliff, went out, you know, asked him to give me a chance. That's all I'm asking for is a chance. And I think Johnny Ace looked me right in the eye, told him he was going to get a chance, and he never did. He reneged on it. I know I'm kind of going back and forth and ranting and raving.
Tell us what happened. Take us to March. What happened Saturday?
Okay, let's go to March. So, leading up to March, you know, I was starting to get burnt out of it all. Honestly, it was TV tapings every Wednesday. It wasn't just I didn't feel, you know, I've got a real job where I work a lot of hours, and I was putting all this time in trying to help this company, and felt like nobody really cared. I was on the verge of getting close to wanting to leave anyway, but wanted to do it. You know, told them, do it however you want. Let's do something with Jim Cornette, where he knocks me out, or he beats me up, and that's what writes me off. Or, you know, let a superstar do something to me to write me off. You know, let somebody get, because everybody wants to see the asshole lawyer get beat up.
Sure.
So I figured let somebody benefit from it. And Cliff and Mondo had worked out a great 2 or 3 month arc that probably would have kept me around, been fun, and would have sold out next 3 Saturday night specials. It was basically going to be, I was going to turn on Cliff in the ladder match. When he was going to be at the top of the ladder, I was going to push it off, turn out, go with Mondo, and try to revamp Mondo's character a little bit. We talked about, you know, having him come out in suits with me. And, you know, because the crowd still gets confused on whether to cheer or boo him. And,
well,
he's a heel.
He's a cool heel, I guess, you know. So.
And, you know, it would almost solidify him as a heel. And then we were thinking, you know, they've done Cliff and Mondo and Barilla so many times, but if Cliff's out of action for a month because they've been overexposing him anyway, you know, bring him back as this monster babyface who wants revenge, and then all of a sudden, you know, that would have freshened things up. Because Cliff was already getting cheered by half the audience anyway. For whatever reason, you know, people didn't like that, so it got thrown away. And then all of a sudden, before I know it, I'm told that a match that basically me and Yancey contributed to, you know, at least over half the crowd. I mean, I had the owners of Bar None get a primo ad for them in the most circulated magazine in town, right when you open the magazine, front page. And then, you know, I'm told basically that we're just going to sit there and be handcuffed during the match. So I'm thinking, great. You know, I've sold all these tickets to my friends, not ruining the ending, but telling them that I've got an unbelievably awesome, holy shit moment during the match. You know, thinking that at the time it's going to be me turning on Cliff, which, you know, would have been huge, I think. And so now I'm sitting there, you know, thinking, okay, this is great. So I'm going to be handcuffed. Steve wasn't happy about it either. Steve Yancey has a lot of ties in the community. His father is, I'd say, you know, one of the African American leaders in Louisville, Clarence Yancey. And Steve is a former athlete and friends with a lot of former U of L basketball players, and he's cousins with you know, NFL player Mike Bush and
right.
whatnot. So, you know, Steve wasn't crazy about the idea of it. You know, I think Steve sold over 100 tickets for this show and wasn't crazy about the idea that he was going to sit there handcuffed the whole time. So a lot of chaos, and it was kind of typical just, they changed stuff a lot. And
sure. yeah.
basically, we got there that day for the main event, and I was happy because I was told at least that Rocco was having a match. So I knew I was going to get to have my fun with my friends during the Rocco match. You know, I had a live mic. I got to go over and insult the U of L basketball players, insult Michael Bush, you know, insult the sponsors of the show. And, you know, me and Rocco really had good chemistry together. And surprisingly, Rocco and Jason, you know, had a really good match. So I took a pretty big bump in that match for me, where I wanted to make Jason look good. And I jumped on the apron. Jason hit me. I probably, should have practiced this or should have been trained it, but let myself basically, I jumped as far and as high as I could and kind of ran myself into the railing where the fans are.
Mm-hmm.
I hit my head on it, and I wouldn't say I had a concussion, but let's just say, in between that match and the main event, I was in the back sitting down with an ice pack on my head, you know, for an hour. So, you know, I didn't think it was anything too serious. One of the diva girls is a nurse in real life, and she said she thought I was fine. She said, just rest. So, basically, before every match, Cornette basically gets the people who are in the match in a room. It's right outside before the heel and face entrances, and goes through the match with them. So we're sitting there, and we're going through the main event match, and now this is me. I did not hear this first person, so what I'm telling you is just what I heard. I'd heard that things had been nixed and that Steve wanted to, you know, get physical with some people, you know, and do something for all these people he brought out. So the game plan was we stay handcuffed during the match. After the match, when we get unhandcuffed, Rocco Bellagio comes out and attacks Flo Rida. Now, when we're going through the finish in the locker room, and I've asked other people in the locker room, if I wanted to make sure that I wasn't wrong, because I'd be the first to admit if I was in the wrong. Jim Cornette specifically says, you know, Yancey, you take out Rocco, then whatever, you do your thing with Christian, you take him out, show ends with you and raises your hands in the air. And, you know, and I was like, that's fine, you know. I was happy to put Steve over. You know, I felt like, especially if I wasn't going to be coming back to OVW anyway, it made sense storyline-wise. I mean, I'd thrown a drink in his face. I'd slapped him. I'd pushed him. I'd done other stuff. You know, I mean, I know the wrestling formula, the baby face is supposed to finally get the heel back. So Cornette specifically says, before we go out, you know, Yancey, you do your thing to Christian, you know, and then it's over. So we have the match. Low Rider stiffs me on a shot, which there'll be a receipt for that down the road someday. I can guarantee you that. And when it's time for Rocco to hit the ring and attack Low Rider, I jump in there with him. We had never gone through this part. When Cornette had set up the cage match, you know, all three of the wrestlers had set it up, had planned it themselves, and then Cornette had made some changes. Well, this ladder match was completely different. Cornette basically let them do what they wanted to do and only threw in two suggestions, maybe. And as far as stuff with me and Yancey, we never even went over it. Like, you know, what he was going to do to me. You know, when I told him to slam me or something. And kind of, we would just improvise. So basically, you know, we get to the end. Lowrider comes out. Rocco comes out to attack Lowrider. I come over, and because of what Lowrider done earlier, I start choking him in the corner, too. But I'm supposed to be in the ring anyway, because as soon as Yancey takes Rocco out, he's supposed to take me out. So he body slams Rocco, he clotheslines Rocco, and then we thought it'd be funny if I jumped on his back, acted like I was trying to put a sleeper on him, that he would even act like for a second, you know, that it was working, but yet he'd be smiling, and I'm sitting there thinking I got him. He tosses me over his shoulder, picks me up, and gives me kind of an awkward choke slam, rock bottom, body slam combo, and then gets on top of me, chokes me. I tell him, I said, keep choking me. You know, I'll hold my breath, because since I'm bald-headed, my head will turn red. You know, it'll look good. And then Rocco actually rolls me out of the ring and carries me to the back, and I'm limp and I'm unconscious, is the way I'm playing it. You know, to put Steve over is that he finally got me big time. So we walk through the curtains, and the first thing, Cornette is immediately screaming at me, saying, "Ooh, what the hell were you doing getting in the ring? You think you're Lou Fez or something? You weren't supposed to get in the ring." I said, "Jimmy?" And keep in mind, and this is something else, I guess, we'll talk about in a minute, but these unwritten rules of wrestling that I don't know how I'm supposed to know them, you know. Nobody ever sat me down and told me anything. All I know is I told Jimmy, you told me, you said before we went out, Yancey, you do your thing to Christian when the match is over. So he realizes at that point, I think, that he was wrong. So then he changes it to, well, the only reason we did that is because you said since you sold those tickets, you had to send your people home happy. Well, that makes no sense. Steve Yancey may have said that to him, to send his people home happy, but me getting choked out didn't benefit me in any way. And to be honest, you know, I never would try to interfere in whatever storyline they were doing. So I basically said, you know, Jimmy, I never fucking said that. And, you know, at this point, he comes over to me, and I'm preparing, thinking that there's going to be a fight. Cliff comes to me, and Yancey comes to me, and Cliff says to me, Christian, please don't do it. I brought you in. They're going to hold me responsible. Because, you know, at that point, all that's going through my mind is, you know, fuck this guy. You know, all the shit that I've done for this company, you know, just in terms of hustling tickets, hustling ads for them, you know, going out and not being trained and taking bumps, going out and I, you know, basically playing the fool sometimes on TV. And, you know, then he even makes the comment, at this point I'd clenched my fist, and he makes the comment, do you want to hit me? And I'm sitting there thinking, well, fuck yeah, I want to hit you. But I also don't want to fuck Cliff over, and I don't want to fuck Kenny Bolin over, who is Cornette's best friend and who is also, you know, one of the reasons that I was getting so much TV time. So I stand there and I bite my tongue. And then Cornette even says, I mean, funny. Yeah, I'm sitting there so mad, wanting to fight, makes the comment, well, come on, you want to fight? You know, maybe you'll at least give me a better fight than Santino did. I guess referencing the, I guess he slapped Santino in the face 20 times and Santino stood there and took it back when he was in OVW.
Wow.
And, you know, at that point, I basically just said, you know, Oh, then he wanted to start going into. So then he changes his tune to, you shouldn't be doing anything physical. It looks horrible. You're on this. You should be on the stick. And I'm thinking to myself, well, motherfucker, nobody's trained me to do anything. But yet, you know, you're all for telling people, you know, you go ahead and hit Christian there. You hit Christian there. I mean, you know, I mean, Paradise would take some time sometimes to show me how to take bumps. And Cliff would try to help me. But, I mean, it's not like I ever went to a wrestling class. I had asked Nick Densmore if I could get a session with him one time just so my bumps wouldn't look bad. But all the other wrestlers were telling me, Christian, you're not a wrestler. You're a lawyer. Your bumps are supposed to look corny. You know? So, you know, and then he's saying, you know, well, let's watch the videotape. Let's see how shitty it looked. So now he's just trying to embarrass me in front of the locker room. And I say, fuck this. I don't need this shit. Fuck you. And let me stop. Chris Bolin and Jamin Olivencia grabbed me, calmed me down, put me in a closet for about 15 minutes, and probably stopped me from doing something really stupid. I'm not by any means saying that I would have whipped Jim Cornette's ass, because I got to be honest, I think the guy's a lunatic. I may have gotten beaten up by him.
Let me ask you, how come he was bitching at you and not Yancey? I'm confused about that.
I am too.
That doesn't make sense, you know, somehow. So.
I guess because Yancey had called him and it basically got it changed to where Rocco would get involved in the end so Yancey could get his moment of glory on him or whatever.
Right.
And then so I guess Cornette approved of that, but then they also threw in that I'd be in, and honestly, Cornette either forgot that he said it, you know, I'd seen him go off on people before, but, you know, the difference is...
I was just listening to a podcast today with Brutal Bob Evans that was saying that, like, Cornette is relatively calm nowadays, that his wife's been a big calming influence on him. Would you say that's not necessarily the case, or what?
I would say that is... Well, let me put it this way. In the real world, in the normal person world, that's an absolutely not the case. But according to Cliff and according to some of these other wrestlers... He used to be 10 times worse. But to any rational, normal human being that isn't in the wrestling business, you would think the guy belongs in an insane asylum. I mean, he's very passionate. He works very hard. He tries. You know, whatever bad feelings I have about a 10-minute blow up about him, I'm not going to sit here and say that. I don't think the guy is a genius, and
well,
he knows more about wrestling.
He knows more about wrestling than most people have forgot. I mean, he does.
Well, exactly. I mean, the stuff, the storylines, and the stuff that he would come up with at the snap of a finger. I mean, you know, for a few months, I really, really enjoyed him. I really enjoyed being around him, and you know, he always made me laugh, and I always felt like I was learning stuff from him. And, you know, of course, when you're on the different side of it and you're getting ripped in front of, you know, the locker room.
Sure,
You're responsible for probably half the crowd being there. You know, it doesn't sit well.
Well, that was a complete shock. I mean, obviously, you must have been in shock. I mean, this was kind of all left field, wasn't it?
I had no idea what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And you know, he's, they say, and you know, some of the guys that I've become friends with on the show, they say that, you know, that's nothing compared to what he's done to some people before. But here's the difference. I was taking a small trip into the wrestling world. I'm not trying to be a professional wrestler. But in my world, if a person gets in your face and starts screaming at you, then you give them a fist fight. Apparently in the wrestling world, if Jim Cornette screams at you, you don't say a word and you put your head down. But, you know, this
shit.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you. We do have one wrestler on our panel, Murder One. What do you make of all this? And what do you make of guys that don't have experience but sell a lot of tickets? Do they belong on a show? I mean, what's your take on this as a wrestler, Murder?
Hey, if it's good for business, it's good for business. But ain't no man going to tolerate no other motherfucker yelling at you. I don't give a fuck
Thank
who you are. He's my favorite man. I was sitting here thinking about it. I was like, this dude, this is my favorite manager. But if he was yelling at me like this, somebody's going to call the cops because I'm about to fuck him up.
And, you know, that's the way I feel. And these wrestlers in OVW, and I've been talking about it to them for the last 2 days, they don't get it. They don't understand why I'm upset. They don't understand why I wanted to hit him and fight him.
I understand, because your manhood was putting us in a position.
Something to the fact that I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but Murder One, isn't there something to the fact that a guy like Cornette could, I hate to use get away with that, but, you know, couldn't he kind of get away with that, and you should just kind of put your head down and say thank you?
He can get away with it on people that let him get away with it. I'm the kind of person that I don't give a fuck if, you know what I'm saying, I got X amount of dollars. You know what? If you try to punk me out in front of everybody, pull me to the side and yelling at me, you know, one thing. But trying to punk me out in front of the boys, fuck that. Because behind closed
that
doors,
was my, that was my big thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't do that shit.
Because number one, Jim Cornette's not my boss. You know, I don't have to take his shit because I don't need OVW. So, you know, for him to do all that and get in my face, you know, it's like, you know, I honestly, a part of me really regrets that I didn't.
Yeah. See, that's the truth, though. Because, like he said, in the street, that's how it's supposed to be. If somebody yelling at you, you ain't supposed to take that shit. Supposed to bust them in the mouth and let's do this. That's the way I look at it. It's supposed to be conducted any place. I don't give a fuck who you are. You come at me like that, you better be prepared to defend yourself. Whether it's church, wrestling, wherever.
Looks like we just lost our guest. Oh, wait a minute, he's back.
We did?
Yeah,
he's back. Is there a Christian?
Just a sec. I'll hook him back in here.
Okay.
Christian, you're back.
I'm back. I got cut off for about 5 seconds. I was trying to make was, you know, out of respect for Danny, out of respect for Cliff, and out of respect for the Bolins, you know, I didn't throw a punch. I didn't let him goad me into throwing the first punch at him. Would I have whipped his ass? I'm not saying that. But I tell you what, I would have got one good punch in on him, and then I'm sure it would have got broken up pretty quick. You know, he's a nut. Who knows? He might have beat the fuck out of me. But, you know, part of me, you know, just can't believe that I let somebody stand there and yell in my face in front of people.
That's just a chance you got to take, man. You know, if you get your ass whooped, at least you stood up for your.
I don't mind getting my ass. Don't get me wrong. I've had my ass whipped before, and I will get my ass whipped again. That's not what I was afraid of.
I'm sitting there looking at Cliff,
who I thought had broke his ankle, who looks at me, he's my friend, and who begs me, Christian, please walk away, don't do it.
Yeah, tell us about that, just not a side note, but what happened with Cliff Compton's leg and ankle during that match? What happened?
The ladders were not top-of-the-line ladders. And the big spot was going to be Cliff was going to do the super fly splash off the top of the ladder. And my understanding is the referee was supposed to be holding the ladder to make sure it stayed steady.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
It wasn't held steady enough. Apparently, Cliff was going to miss on the Superfly Splash anyway.
Ooh.
So, in his words to me, once he realized the ladder was going down, he could either be a pussy and take a pussy fall, or he could go ahead and just and take a real one. And you know what? To his credit, he took a very painful-looking fall, and I thought he'd legitimately broke his leg. I mean, I was looking at the ref. I'm looking at Yancey. I'm looking at Mo Green. Me and Yancey, at this point, we've broken character. I'm like, get me out of handcuffs. Let's see if this motherfucker's okay. You know, it turns out that, you know, nothing was broke. I don't, you know, thank God. And he out of respect for Mondo, he wanted Mondo to have his moment. So he sucked it up and he finished the match.
Wow.
But, you know, it was a gruesome looking fall. And even like my girlfriend in the crowd said, you know, I looked at your face, and I could tell that, you know, you thought it was real. I mean, you looked legitimately, you know, really concerned. So, you know, he took a nasty fall, and I think it's just because those ladders weren't safe.
What you got, Larry? Jump in here and ask some questions.
Just a couple quick questions, Christian. I get the impression from what you're saying that you got on well with Mike Mondo. Is that accurate?
Initially, I considered him one of my closest friends in OVW. He, we go out together socially. You know, we go out and have beers after the show. We would talk on the phone. And he really, really disappointed me two nights ago because he had the audacity to text me that I was out of line on Saturday night. Mm. So him saying that to me, that's not what a friend would say to somebody. I have guys that barely know me, referees, production people, calling me to see if I was okay. When I walked out of the arena, I texted Danny Davis. I just texted him. I said, I quit out of respect for you. I didn't get in a fight in the back. And, you know, Danny's somebody who I did a lot of stuff for. You know, some other promoter had screwed him, so I wrote a letter for him to the guy threatening him, legally threatening him, of course, and, you know, didn't charge him a dime for it. You know, and so for him not to call and check on me after he heard what happened, you know, to me it just, and I guess a part of it again is this crazy wrestling business. I don't understand it. You know, in the real world, if somebody that I'm good friends with had just got put in an incident like that, I'd make sure they were okay. Apparently, in the wrestling world, things are supposed to just roll off. Cliff told me that Jim Cornette even asked him today if I was going to be at TV Wednesday. Nothing happened. And Cliff was like, if you walked in, Cornette probably would act like nothing had happened. He'd act normal.
From what you're saying, it sounds like, did I get you right, that this was going to be the blow off anyway for you?
Well, I had told them that I could not, because I believe in doing things professional and I believe in keeping my word. So I'd gone to Jimmy and I had said, I can't commit to every Wednesday from now on. I said, but if you let me know ahead of time, and, you know, but I can't sit there from 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock, you know, every Wednesday. It was just becoming too much of a time commitment.
Mm-hmm.
I told him I couldn't be there every yeah. week. I knew Cliff was going to be taking some time off anyway. Jimmy basically, you know, they were really concerned and wanted to make sure that I, in some capacity, was going to stay around. And, you know, I just told them, you know, I only live probably 2 miles from the Davis Arena. And, you know, I told them it's nothing for me to shoot over there, you know, cut a promo. But, you know, I can't follow these wrestling rules where you get here early and you stay till the last match. You know, I don't have the time for that. So I was certainly looking to reduce my role. But they had plans, as far as I know, probably not after this interview, but still had plans. They wanted to use me for something, and just out of respect for the wrestler, that it was going to help. I was honestly going to swallow my pride, bite my tongue, and tell them that I'd come do the shoot the angle that they wanted to shoot, as long as I didn't have to interact with Jim Cornette in the back.
Was it Cornette who nixed the way you guys had? I got the impression that it was Mondo and Compton who'd worked out the program and how that match was going to go. Was it Cornette who nixed it?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, Danny just does the business stuff. So whenever I would ask Danny anything about, you know, wrestling-wise, the answer is always, that's a Cornette question. And my understanding was Cliff and Mondo had taken this to Danny, you know, because Danny's about trying to make money and pay his lease on this building. And, you know, the storyline would have basically stretched out to where, you know, the next Saturday Night Special, you know, would have been Mondo as champ with me in his corner against somebody. And then Cliff would have returned, and then the next one, which I guess would have been in April, would have been, Cliff coming back as the red hot baby face wanting revenge, which, you know, we definitely would have sold that out. And then
if anybody was mad that you were on TV, isn't that all pretty much a Cornette call in the end anyway? Isn't he actually making the call over who is and who is not on TV?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying? So,
I mean, I'm not just walking out there unannounced.
Right.
A lot of people got really pissed off when I got Rocco Bellagio, the push I got him.
Hmm.
As a matter of fact, I even had, I'm not going to say a confrontation, but I had heard that Ali had been saying stuff behind my back, in the back, saying that I had disrespected him by getting a bodyguard because
he had Mr. B.
Yeah, and my response to that, number one, first off, Cornette loved to get my idea. Number two, maybe I'm missing the angle, but I thought Mr. B was more of a comedy act bodyguard that was always screwing up Ali's matches and was always getting berated, you know, and that's another guy, Mr. B, who, you know, I really feel bad for because, you know, that guy really wants to wrestle. You know, he really works hard and, you know, him, Benny Bray, you know, a couple others, you know, they always say their roster's so thin that but why not give these guys an opportunity? Why not let me do my mid-card faction while I still have a little bit of juice because I'm coming off being associated with Cliff and see how the guys do? I mean, what do they have to lose? 60, 80 people come to TV tapings Wednesday, and nobody knows what channel it's on. So it's not like I don't see what they had to lose. I don't understand.
Well,
more question, if I could, Trent, because our time is running down here.
Go ahead.
I just wondered what you talked about Barella and the spot that he has at OVW. What's your speculation about why he does have such a top spot if he's just not that good of a worker?
You know, I think just because he's been there so long, I'm guessing this is speculation. I'm guessing he probably has been there longer than anyone in the locker room. I can be realistic and honest. Maybe the fact that I dislike him is making me say that he's terrible, but I think I honestly do think he's not a good wrestler, and I've watched him botch so many things, and so many of the young guys told me that, you know, he gets blown up after 5 minutes, and, you know, just so many of the matches that I was a part of, you know, I thought he was terrible, but, you know, I mean, who am I? You know, I'm a fan who just had an opinion. You know, apparently somebody likes him, but, you know, when he was the one that was the champ, when WWE pulled out, I mean, what were they drawing? 20, 25 people? I mean, I think one of the reasons is he does look like a wrestler. He has a good look. And, you know, I think basically because they didn't have many options. They're the way they put it, they didn't have any baby faces.
Trent, back to you before we wrap up. We got about 3-4 minutes left.
Okay. Yeah, this has been fascinating. Thanks for doing this, Christian. We appreciate it.
any time, guys. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. It seems
I could tell y'all stories till midnight.
Yeah, well, we get you back on sometime. This has been pretty interesting so far, you know. So it seems like, I know you said you don't follow indies too much, but it seems like OVW is a bit of a secretive place, which isn't a bad thing. Would you say that's a true statement, or am I kind of wrong on that?
Just absolutely. I mean, if I didn't live in Louisville, Kentucky, I mean, I would have no idea. Like I said, when WWE pulled out, they lost their TV spot. I mean, I didn't even know they were still in business.
I just mean the way they run their business backstage. Are they pretty cliquish, would you say, or just kind of their own little group? Or, you know, it seems like they're. I kind of think of them like their own little bubble of sorts. If that makes any sense to you.
They're definitely in their own fucking fantasy world.
Well, as you know, I really enjoy OVW. I mean, I think as indies go, you know, it's not the top of the heap, but it's probably a bit above average, I would say. Would you agree, Larry?
I enjoy watching the TV shows.
So,
I watch them every week, and I think it's, you know, it's a good indie product.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, and I thought it was really improving. You know, when Cliff came back, and, you know, I think it was really starting to improve.
Just two quick questions
I think Cliff had a big part in the overall product and other people stepping it up.
Just two quick questions. Number one, what's your take on Ryan Nemeth and him being signed to WWE? And number two, as a fan that got to be a part of wrestling, what was the most surprising thing, you know, that you found out going behind the curtain? Number three, are you done with wrestling, would you say?
Well, I guess number one, Ryan Nemeth, I have nothing but nice things to say about him. I don't know how he felt about me, but was always a nice guy. Is actually a very intelligent guy. Who am I to say if somebody's ready? I mean, does it really matter if he's an OVW or if he's down in FCW? Probably not. I mean, is there that big of a difference? Probably not. I mean, he's got a brother that's a superstar. He's got a great look. And I'm sure that he will have a bright future. Question number two, I lost track.
What was it like to be? What was the most surprising thing to get to go behind the curtain?
Oh,
and what was it like? Yeah.
You know, it was like being a kid and finding out Santa Claus doesn't exist. watching, and I mean this in all seriousness and all sincerity, I couldn't be more disappointed in the way these guys acted. You know, even at this level, at this OVW level, at the way people would try to keep other people down, at the way people would resent somebody like me who absolutely had nothing to gain from helping OVW. You know, to have Jim Cornette do that, to have Danny Davis, who still hasn't called me, it really, very, very, very disappointing. I mean, really, I got to see all the stuff that I always read about, the bad side of wrestling, and Cliff and Punk and those guys used to always, you know, tell me that it wasn't fun anymore. And, you know, it really, sometimes I'd walk into that locker room and I'd be like, who died? I mean, you know, it was...
Hey, sorry. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're about out of time.
Yes, sir.
We'll be back
Thank
next
you so much,
week.
Christian.
Thank you very much. Jimmy Jacobs, yeah. Dragon Gate USA, next Monday night.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.